Growing businesses and finance professionals, you need Bill Spend and Expense, the free-to-use spend management software. It's powered by the Bill Divvy Corporate Card, which helps growing companies scale with credit lines of $500 to $15 million, automated expense reports, and as many virtual cards as you need. For a limited time, get $500 when you get started with Bill Spend and Expense. Request a demo at bill.com/get500. Terms and conditions apply. Advertised credit ranges are not guaranteed and are determined at approval. Card issued by Cross River Bank, member FDIC.
Create the deck of your dreams now at Menards. Spend less time maintaining your deck and more time enjoying it with UltraDeck low-maintenance composite decking from Menards. It's easy to install and built to last. Plus, get free estimates fast with our deck design program in-store and on Menards.com. Save big on UltraDeck and check out more great deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
You're listening to the Mindless Wrestling Podcast, now part of the ChairShot Radio Network, on thechairshot.com. Remember, always use your head.
You look like a dude who should be pumping my fucking gas.
This isn't doing it for me. I'm not getting enjoyment out of this.
He was a before the bell rings all-star.
All right, everybody. It is Thursday night, June 20th, 2024. You are listening to the Mindless Wrestling Podcast. We are part of the ChairShot Radio Network. You can find us on thechairshot.com, where we remind you and encourage you to always use your heads. I'm going to wrap around the room here and introduce this cast of characters that we got on this show like I always do. I'm going to start off with the Mindless Wrestling Podcast resident high flyer. He is a man that hails from the Purple Haze in Cloud 9. He's Bucky's tag team partner, a man destined to go through a barbershop window. Jason, sir, how are you?
I am wonderful. I drink from the cup of glory today, my friends. I am preparing for a parade through the streets of Boston tomorrow to celebrate the reigning, defending, undisputed world NBA champions, the Boston Celtics.
This masshole.
Yeah, it's going to be an unbearable podcast if you are not a fan of the Boston Celtics. So just, bear with me, please.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Looking forward to it, Jason. And from the Rob the Genius podcast, he is deep in some data right now, the minister of truth, the father of facts and figures, the deacon of data, the official shoot bear of the Mindless Wrestling Podcast, and the man with the golden shovel, Mr. Rob, sir, how's your night?
Not too bad. So anyone listening, please, hear me for the first few minutes because I'm doing homework right now.
Rob is on assignment while he's on assignment. So Now we are not alone this week. We spoke his name and he showed he is here. He is dusting, shaking off the dust, coming back out of semi-retirement for one night only. The legendary host of the Outsider's Edge. He's stretching. He's getting loosened up. Here he is. Look at him go. He is the yin to Rob's yang, the pain in Rob's ass. The man with more variance than Chad Gable has had Intercontinental Championship opportunities. He is Mr. Ray Cash. Ray, welcome to the show, buddy.
Say his name and he appears. I came to ruin my time.
I've been doing this show for how long? And I have never once got the Bruce Buffer treatment.
Hey, I feel that goes in the Hall of Fame of introductions. I feel so special. And I don't know why. I shouldn't. But thank you.
Ray, we don't get you on here enough, man. We always have a blast when you're on here. And I know, like we've talked off air, we've all got life stuff going on and you've been in semi-retirement for podcasts. And I threw up the pod signal over the weekend. Myself, Ray, Rob, we were on with PC Tunney. We did a special emergency episode of our, review of Clash at the Castle. You can listen to that on thechairshot.com. It's available now. And I threw the podcast signal up there. I said, Ray, come on with us, man. We haven't had you on in a minute. You know, we love chopping things up here with Ray, and, you know, here he is.
You know, I've always said, besides my shows, I had two homes away from home. The Ricky and Clive wrestling show. Shout out to my boys, Rick and Clive. And this, you know, so, like, I've always felt like this was a home away from home. So it's always good to come back home.
And you really are the official, unofficial fourth member of this show. Just as many times as you've contributed to the content here, you know, not only being on the show, but also throwing ideas at us, throwing, you know, different things like that. We do appreciate you having on here, or having you on here, I should say. So,
Ray, how is your Ric Flair retirement treating you?
Well, I came back on the show to let you guys know that I will never retire.
And it's funny that Jason brings that up, because part of me, like, earlier on in the week, I was like, I got to figure out a way to show something here on Ray. And one of the things I was going to throw out there was a Ric Flair barb, a guy who's retired and unretired more than Ric Flair. So yeah, good shout out there, Jason.
Hey, I'm getting up there in my retirements. But you know what? That's the beauty of the business. As long as I can be over.
Well, what did the Undertaker say? He's like, I tried to get out, and it just keep dragging me back in.
Okay, man.
So, gentlemen, we have had a wild, wild week in the professional wrestling world, particularly WWE. We had Clash at the Castle, the skirmish with the Scottish, as I like to call it, over the weekend. Incredible show. Again, like I said, if you want to check out mine, Ray's, and Rob's review of that with PC Tunney, that is up on thechairshot.com. Jason, we have not heard your thoughts about this. So I'm going to let you take the floor. Clash at the Castle, man. Did you have a good time or what?
I had a great time. It was exactly what we love about these international shows. It was, you know, on during the day, first off, and it was, you know, over by what? It was five? Not even. I had a great time. There were a few surprises, which were a lot of fun. And yeah, the set was awesome. The crowd was incredible. They didn't get too chant happy, which I'm always kind of annoyed at international shows. But no, they were just the right amount of, you know, crazy. It was awesome.
Any particular match stand out at you as being your favorite, or did you just enjoy the show overall?
I would say I just enjoyed the show overall. Nothing really, like, stood out. But, yeah, I had a great time.
Yeah, I mean, all in all, I thought the show was good. There was a lot of things you could probably pick apart. I personally don't know, man. I talked about this before. When we started off with the WWE Women's Championship or WWE Women's Tag Team Champion talent name, was that how they wrote it?
Yeah,
talent name. And from now on, he is talent name. He is WWE Women's Tag Team Champion talent name against AJ Styles. This was the right amount of violence for me. Like, I know Rob and I have talked at great length about how much is too much in these matches, and I think this was just enough.
I think it was perfect. They beat the bag out of each other. There were a few... I thought the way they kept teasing Mama Rhodes was great, because I was like, okay, that's their out. If they want Bucky, what the hell? If they want talent name to say his, you know, I quit, then that's the perfect avenue to not make him look like a fool getting, you know, tapping out to the phenomenal lock or whatever it is. So, yeah, it was perfect. So.
Some of the discourse I want to talk about for a minute, because I was really irritated with the way people treated the ending of this. And I know, Rob, we talked with Patani, and you didn't care for the ending, and it fell a little flat. Looking at it in hindsight, I feel a little bit differently. Because people were like, oh, he said I quit to that. I'm like, brother, he is handcuffed to the top rope with nowhere to go, and some dude is standing over him with steel steps. You got one of two choices here. You can get your brains in kayfabe. You can get your brains absolutely beat in for your own pride, or you can say, you know what? I've had enough. Don't hit me with that, sir. Yeah, to me, it makes sense after I think about it in hindsight.
In the moment, I was just like, oh, that's perfect. So I'm sorry. I had the exact wrong reaction. I exact opposite reaction to you guys that you guys did, apparently, Rob and Ray, because I was like, oh. Oh, it just made all the sense in the world. It's like, yeah, of course he, you know, There's no way out of this, man. We're done. So it made perfect sense. I loved it.
Well, in the immediacy, because I came to that realization too. But in the immediacy, sometimes the fact that we're older wrestling fans, we're a bit jaded. DJ actually wrestled. I've done some things in the wrestling business, not a lot, but some. Sometimes we get a little jaded and look at things outside of the purview of a fan. And so I look in immediacy. You looked at that. I looked at that like, and from a realistic standpoint, and I'm like, But what saved me wasn't just the story. You know, a lot of the times the chicken shit heel or the smarmy heel, which AJ has become now since he's turned, will try to get the face angry to get them off their game. And then in the course of the match, once the face gets to a certain level of anger that he doesn't do stupid things anymore, they get really scared. Christian does a great job of this and has in his career. And I think that was a perfect example of AJ realizing, I think I went too far. And at that moment, like, baby faces aren't supposed to do the dastardly thing. Cena and I'm not counting Attitude Era, guys. That is a whole different world. Cena and Cody, who are the best white meat guys we got, have delved into that, sometimes I gotta beat your ass in a way that's not the right way. And I think that was a perfect way to show that, you know, you messed with my mama, you went a little too far. Now I really gotta give it to you. Because a good babyface would have said, I won the match, I'm done. He still busts his ass open.
From a super nerd standpoint, they acknowledge the past Bullet Club, like, history.
Mm-hmm.
And so from a kayfabe standpoint, AJ knows, hey, maybe not right now, but I know what talent name used to be up to in Japan. He's capable of doing this.
Yeah. So they were never together in the Bullet Club.
But I mean, they acknowledged that they were both in Bullet Club, and assume AJ had a TV.
Well, yeah, and WWE is kind of lowering those walls a little bit, so that you can tell some of those stories that happened outside of their bubble, and incorporate it into your own without flat out, you know, copyright infringing anybody. Let me ask you guys this, because this was a thought I had. With matches like this, I'm not overly fond of I quit matches, because usually if the babyface is going to say I quit, there's usually some fuckery, okay? Mm-hmm. Or if the heel says I quit, it's usually not real satisfying. Like, the only time I've really watched an I quit match where I'm like, okay, the ending was absolutely, they stuck the landing, was with Edge and, Rollins? I think it was
I quit.
Yeah. Yeah, when they had Beth tied up and they were getting ready to clobber Beth.
Yeah, well, that was Finn Balor.
No, Finn Balor, you're right. I'm sorry. Edge had so many different feuds. I really like that one, because right there, that's like, okay, you got, man, that's at the end of it all. They're gonna clobber your wife. They've already knocked her out and they're about to take her out. You know, I get that. And that's probably the only one that I really care for. With it, I'm gonna throw this around the room. I'll start with Rob. Do you think that a match like this would have been better served as a last man standing?
Yes. Because, I mean, personally, look, I mean, I don't like the scared guy finish. Because, and I brought it up how, like, Edge and Christian did that earlier this year. I didn't like it either. On that one, they did it either. So I just don't like it. So.
Okay.
Because to me, like, okay, because, I mean, you can do something extra. Like, I mean, no, you don't just put them in a, you know, in a figure four leg lock and they tap out. No, you got to do something extra. Like, you know, with Magnum T and Tully Blanchard, and we're going to watch that one these weeks. But, that had, you know, Magnum did something extra to get Tully to say, I quit.
Yeah.
And Ronda got Charlotte to say, I quit. She wrapped her arm in a chair and put her arm bar, right?
Right.
That got her to say, I quit. So, I mean, you do something extra. And so that the heel isn't just tapping out to, like I said, just a regular old submission hold. I just don't like the scared, you know, giving, you know, finish. I just don't like it. That's me. Okay. So, you know, I just don't like it. So
Ray, what do you think? Would this have been better served as a last man standing match, or were you fine with this match as it stands on its own?
It's always about the story. the point of this story is AJ and his paranoia about not having it anymore. That's the entire crux of the story. AJ's been for weeks, you know, initially started when Solo took him out, and he was out all those weeks, and none of the OC ever gave that boy a call.
Yeah.
And then that's what caused him to turn heel. That's the whole reason him and LA Knight had the problem, because while he was gone, LA Knight got over to a super level, and AJ felt like, you're taking my spotlight, right? Instead of going out to the dude that took him out, no, you're taking my spotlight, I want you. This is all about AJ's paranoia, about him thinking, I don't think I have it anymore.
Yeah.
Overcompensating for that. So the I quit was a necessary, in my opinion, was a necessary stipulation to continue to further show AJ's degradation of his personality, in that I don't think I have it anymore. I had to fake a retirement to get another match with you. Literally, the boss told me to get to the back of the line, and I had to fake a retirement to get you pissed off to get another match with you. In the process of that match, I not only antagonized you over and over again, but I antagonized your mama. Right? So at a certain point, yeah, I need to be scared of you at the end of this match. Now, okay. I understand Rob's point that, yeah, the scared guy trope gets a little funny sometimes. But I think in the crux of this story and where AJ's been and where he's going, it was perfect.
So you still think we're on a trajectory with AJ Styles? We're not near the end. Okay. I like it.
One thing I did not like was them announcing the match with Mara Fuji so quick. They should have held off on that for a sec. You know, because AJ should have done some soul searching. We haven't seen him since that match happened, and we already know his next match. Let me see him for a minute, despondent. You know, let Carl and Gallows try to come talk to him and him push them off and kind of be in his own world. And then you can throw that match out there. And because it's got to happen. I want it to happen. AJ Styles and Mara Fuji is going to be a great in-ring match, right? It's a dream match.
Hey,
I think that was just so.
Do you think, Ray, do you think that AJ could lose that match to further this segregation story?
Yes, because that's the match that EO's on, and I don't see both of them winning.
Yeah, so
it's interesting that Ray talks about somebody's story, because there's another person I want to talk about in just a minute. Before I get Jason's thought, Jason, were you fine on this, or do you think this match would have been better served as a last man standing?
No, I loved the finish, so I thought it was perfect. It protected both, you know, AJ, you know, it didn't, you know, he, like Ray said, he's not tapping out to some extra figure four or something like that. Yeah. You know, it just kind of happened, but you know, he in his paranoia, he pushed Cody to, you know, American Nightmare Bullet Club Cody, and AJ said, oh, maybe five years ago. Yeah, and exactly, to Ray's point, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, I could have hung with, you know, Bullet Club, American Nightmare. Now I'm not so sure, and he's going about to splatter my brains everywhere. I quit.
All right. Let's talk about somebody's storyline, because I think this is part of what's getting lost with a lot of people. Drew McIntyre. Man, they painted the picture. Drew McIntyre, he did the sit-down interviews with Kathy Kelly on the kickoff show. Everything Drew McIntyre, like, they just laid out a mural. Drew McIntyre is leaving Scotland with the WWE World Heavyweight Championship, man. Like, we all had it. It was all on our bingo cards. And then in a stroke of what I consider brilliance, they snatched it away from us in the best way possible. The setup, the camera angle, everything with CM Punk coming out and screwing him over. And they were hot. They were shoot hot leaving Scotland, man. And it was the perfect way to send that off, because if you pay attention to Drew's story, that is Drew's story. Mm-hmm. You know, I won the WWE Championship in front of no fans, and this is all I wanted, and he just keeps getting fucked over. He got fucked over at WrestleMania. He got fucked over by Roman Reigns a year prior to that, and, you know, at the first Clash in the Castle. You know, and now he got fucked over again, and this is – but, you know –
he also lost the match – at the WrestleMania in front of people to Bobby.
Thank you for bringing that up. I was going to bring that up. We don't talk about that enough. Great.
Exactly. Point. That's part of the story, too. The first one in front of people. I'm finally going to close this fucking infernal time loop. Drew's like, yes, I'm going to do it. And then he lost.
He loses to Bobby Lashley. That's great. No, that is, that's a great layer of the story that a lot of people, like Ray said, they miss. And like, if you look at the overall picture, does Drew McIntyre deserve that championship? Absolutely. Absolutely. He's been a workhorse. He's reinvented himself on this last run. This feud with AJ Styles has been nothing short of incredible. He's been incredible at it, but that's not his story. Like, eventually, that's probably the exclamation point to his story. But much like Ray was saying about AJ Styles, we're on a journey right now. And it bothers me that people really don't want to go on this journey. You know, Ray, I said something with you, Rob, and Tunney about Sami Zayn and what are we doing with this Intercontinental Championship run that he's on. And I've thought about this even further, and I retract my statement as far as that goes, because, again, this is part of the journey. This is the payoff of 3 years of Sami Zayn giving us incredible content and weaving himself into the bloodline, his own stuff with the conspiracy theory stuff that he was doing for a little while. It's been 3 years of incredible work. This is the payoff. This is what people, and granted, it's not the World Heavyweight Championship. It's not the Universal Championship, but it's the damn next most important championship in that company.
And he, you know, beat the most protected dude in the company, not named Roman Reigns. So
absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, in hindsight, again, like I said, I retract my statement, you know, from that episode. But, you know, I get it now because this is part of Sammy's journey. And so many people get so hung up on, oh, this is my favorite wrestler and I want my favorite wrestler to win a championship because they deserve it. But don't we deserve a good story? And go ahead. I'm listening.
I'm sorry. We can touch on this in two different ways. We can touch on the actual story in its totality. But let's just talk about it in the interim, right? And what's going on right now, the point very clearly is to get Drew versus Punk at a stadium.
Yeah.
That's the point. We have not been able to do that because Punk's been hurt and then Drew got hurt. So you want to build that. And I mean, no disrespect to any of these cities, but you don't want to do that in Money in the Bank of Toronto. You don't want to do that at Jam at the Sand that Punk's not going to go to in Saudi Arabia. Clash. You wanted to give Drew the title moment, plus Drew and Priest needed to have their match, right? Because Priest cashed in on them. So you're saving that. Now, how do you save that but work that in a way where it makes sense for them to keep missing each other, but the animosity stays strong? They have booked that part of this to perfection.
Yes.
Even the part of Drew saying, fuck it, I quit. Like, it's perfect from that perspective. If you're a UK fan here today, if you're a fan who's from Scotland, and this is real to you from the sense that you guys don't get shows like this often, and the two shows you got, the biggest British star ever, respect to the Bulldog, but he never won a world title. Drew's a world champ. He gets screwed at the end of both, right? I can understand you if you're looking outside of your fan, if you're looking outside of your, you're looking in your fan glasses, actually, and not putting on your smart glasses. Yeah, I get that. But as long as you understand that's with under the guise of the show, like, it makes all the sense in the world.
Okay.
Absolutely. Because I'm allowed to be, you know, bummed out that I was there for Roman losing the title, while I'm appreciative that, you know, I was there for the end of the run at the same time. I'm bummed out. Like, this sucks. Like, come on. Can't you give me one more? Just one more, where I'm actually here.
I'm insanely jealous that you and Rob were in the building for that. Insanely jealous over that.
Again, as I complain about it, I'm the kid who's complaining about too much ice cream. But, like, yeah, I did want to have my cake and eat it too. Sorry. Fine. I did.
Rob, you had something to say. Go ahead.
Yeah, look, okay. You're allowed. No, okay. You root for your favorite wrestlers like it's a shoot, okay? And when they lose, you get mad, and you don't want to be here. You want to hear my tell you, oh, well, it's for the story. Fuck the story, okay?
Sure.
I mean, if it's my favorite wrestler, fuck the story, okay? I want them to win.
Okay? You really think?
It's the same thing in like Superman comic books. I don't care if that character is like tanking sales. I like that character. They rule. So
Look, when Luke got his hand cut off by Darth Vader, I didn't give a fuck about the next chapter. I was mad, okay? I was like, this is some bullshit, okay?
Yeah, but Rob, like, think about
it. It brought you out to the theater for Return of the Jedi, though, didn't it?
I didn't care.
Oh, fuck. You have to stop and think about how he's going to grow as a person because of this, and because he's going to become more like his father, who's now more machine than man, and he has the robot hand, too. No, you're just 9 years old, and Luke Skywalker just got his hand cut off. You're bummed out, man.
And yeah, you know, I mean, so... Look, I don't know, because we're supposed to be fans first, okay? I mean, yes, we're smart and we do all this stuff, yeah, but no, I will never tell, if somebody is genuinely being a fan and they're bummed out because their favorite wrestler lost the match, I am never going to criticize them for that, okay?
I can tell you firsthand, Rob was just like, yeah, man, I understand, because I was bummed out walking out of Philly. I was bummed as fuck out. I was just like, hey, man, I know.
When the ref counted to three, I got up, I went out, I walked out to the concourse. I didn't stand there to watch Cody celebrate. Fuck that shit.
So, oh my God.
Legit question to y'all, because everything you're saying is dead ass right. If you take away UK fans, how many fans out there really came for Drew like that?
Well, I wanted him to win this one. The only reason I let this one go is because they executed it so well.
Yeah. I was pissed that he got okie-doked again.
The problem that I had was I absolutely loved Damian Priest, and this was his match. Like, this was his time. Like, you know, there's been a lot of discourse online about Damian Priest's run and Damian Priest's legitimacy. I think that effort he put in Saturday was fucking Herculean. You know, especially after slipping, hurting his leg. And then continuing that match like that, those two put on a banger, and I won't hear any different about it.
I want to talk about that for a minute, because I think that was 100% an accident. There's no way they planned that or anything like that.
No.
And I don't think he was hurt in any serious way. Maybe for a few minutes he thought he was. But the fact that he immediately turned it on and said, oh, I'm going to sell this for the rest of the match.
Yes.
And I think he wasn't hurt because he repeatedly did the kick, sell, kick, sell, kick, sell spot. You're not doing that if you have actual damage. Maybe he's hurt. I'm not arguing that, but he's not injured, you know? So, but the fact that he just immediately turned that match on a dime and said, no, this is what we're doing now. That was awesome.
And, it's not his fault. He's been screwed by the creative stuff. He hasn't been put in a position to look like the main person on the television show. That's not his fault.
Repeatedly said, Drew, Damian has done the best job he possibly can with the script he was handed.
And so between the match was finally his chance to present himself as the, you know, the number one guy on the television show. And then, you know, and then this Monday he got to open up, and then, you know, and then so finally they're presenting him like the most important person on the television show, and he needed that, because he'd been getting treated like, you know, an afterthought, and he was playing like the frustrated sitcom dad to the gang who can't shoot straight, you know, for 3 hours on Mondays.
I know this isn't a perfect analogy, so don't be literal when I say this analogy. But I remember when Kurt Angle debuted and he won the title from The Rock at Survivor Series or whatever it was at the end of the year. And Angle was good, but he wasn't the Angle we'd know him to be in a year or so later. He was still kind of green, but he got it great, but he still had mastered his character. He was on the rise. Angle was the world champion at a time where the company was hot as fish grease that housed a healthy Stone Cold, Rock, Taker, Triple H, Mankind, Big Show, Kane, Jericho, all these people. Sometimes there's just bigger stars than you, dog.
Yeah.
Well, no, you got to be presented like you're the most important person there.
I could not humanly disagree more. The belt is a prop. The point of the belt is to build a star.
Well, see,
you become a... Hold on. That's fine. the point where you become a superstar, and not in WWE parlance, but hold on.
Ray had to step away. So something's up. Ray had to step away. We're going to continue this discussion.
The thing is, though, especially when you have Cody on the other show, you have to make Damian look like a big deal simply because otherwise he's instantly B champion. I mean, that belt is already working uphill. So I agree that it is a prop in the truest sense of the word, in the literal point that we're watching an acting thing and it's something they carry around that has a point in the story. But I don't think in this case it can be used, it should be used to enhance. I think it needs to be enhanced at this point, at this juncture.
Right. Let's put a pin in that because Ray Cash did have to step away. He got called away for something. We're going to put a pin in that because I'd like to hear him continue that discussion, but we're going to keep this moving here because I want to get into some really big stuff that happened this week on WWE programming. But before we do that, I want to invite you to go over to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. From there, you can look at, browse, peruse, if you will, all the t-shirts that are available from your favorite Chairshot Radio Network podcast, including this one, the Mindless Wrestling Podcast. Go check them out. Go pick one up. The starving artist on this show will thank you. Your body will thank you if you pick one up in soft style. That is prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. And as I finish that plug, Ray Cash is back. Ray, finish your thought, and then we're going to move on to the next segment.
Sorry, guys. Someone was at the door.
No worries.
No, the point I was trying to make is that I think we all look at championships from an era of nostalgia when we believed wrestling was real and not looking at it from the point that we know that the show is a scripted show. So I think your first couple title reigns are test reigns to see what you can do with that championship. I think the championship is supposed to make the man. When you become a true superstar, not WWE everybody calls superstar, but like a real superstar, is when you can transcend that belt. Like, we just watched Roman take a championship that nobody could make anything work with and transcend that championship. We just watched Seth have a run that made a championship that hadn't existed for 15 years and give it an air of prestige that it didn't have. That's when you are truly a superstar, you can do that. What Bianca's done for the women's championship, what Becky did for the women's championship, what Rhea's currently doing now, right? But I think the first couple times you win it, or that first time, it should take you multiple times, is an opportunity for the company to say, you got the ball, kid, let's see what you do. But you can't put all your chips in that basket, because if you do and they fail, your company is hurt. Which is why I think it's always smart to do things like, okay, I'm going to give Edge his first run. That's going to be a test for a couple months. Edge should have had a longer run. That's a terrible analogy, but whatever. Sure. You know, but we're going to hedge our bets and see, can you really replicate this on a regular basis? You know, you notice the people who had those first runs who, you know, were kind of shaky, the ones who made it work, got more reigns and longer reigns as it went.
Actually, Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. But Edge was a great analogy because I checked out like Edge's first title reign. My initial thought was, really? Him? I appreciate it more now. But that first run, I was like, really? Of that entire roster? Him? So I get the analogy. I get it.
Well, see, well, I always disagree with you guys because I think the belt is certification, not elevation. You get the belt because you proved yourself, and that's when it works best. When they put the belt on you to try to make you a thing, it's a mixed bag. I mean, sometimes it works, but it works the best when they put the belt on somebody who has already proven themselves. And let me finish.
I'm sorry.
And like Jason was saying, when you're out on the other show is Cody. And then, and you were talking about people making the belt into something. Seth Rollins was, he and Cody were like the co-number one people on Raw, and they were presented that way. Seth was not presented as an afterthought when he was world champion. Roman, of course, has dominated SmackDown for 3 years as the Universal Champion. He didn't sneak in for 5 minutes and then sneak out. He dominated the show.
You're talking about established people. I'm talking about first title reigns.
Okay, and
go back and look at Seth's first championship. Go look back and look at Roman's first championship.
Seth was having 15-minute monologues to open Raw when he was champion the first time.
He was. You're right.
He dominated the show.
The Judgment Day has dominated the show for the past year and a half?
No, because he was supposed to hold that title from WrestleMania to WrestleMania, dude.
And he got injured. And
he got hurt.
And he dominated the show. When he was champion the first time after he cashed in the briefcase, he was doing the 10-15 minute monologues every Monday. Okay?
You are right.
He dominated the show.
And he got a year long title reign if he didn't, he didn't bust his knee open or whatever.
You guys have chosen the two people who the company saw from the moment they joined the company and said, you're going to run our company in 10 years. Every championship reign is not Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns.
Yes.
Pick somebody else.
And when you don't present them that way, you were telling the audience that this guy is not those guys.
But that's not true. That's nowhere close to being true, because if that's the case, then nobody else will be over. Look at all the other champions we've had.
And look what happened. Okay, when
Nikki AOH. All right, we're going down a weird.
I think we're chasing our tails here a little bit.
When Nikki cashed in the briefcase, she was champion for a month, and if you didn't know better, you know, Charlotte was still champion because they made it like a chump for a month. Okay.
Well, who was Nikki Cross?
Okay.
Right. As the superhero.
And she proved
a chump for a whole
that, and that showed the world she wasn't ready for that spot. Nobody in their mama thought she was ready for that. They gave her the ball because her gimmick got over.
And they showed
it wasn't her. It was the gimmick.
No, they threw a cross on her back. It felt like, because they didn't present her like she was going to hold that title any which way.
What I'm saying is, with Priest, now none of us feels like Priest is a joke, but he has not been, until the pay-per-view, he was not presented as if he was the most important person. He's the world heavyweight champion. He should not, okay, I mean, there were weeks where he barely was on for 10 minutes. He was in my, did a couple of backstage things and nothing else. And he's the world heavyweight champion. And no, I'm sorry. You can't, that you're making him look lesser than when you do that.
When
the Alpha Academy
was the champ. When Seth was the champ, that he was only on TV for 7 minutes. There are episodes, Cody's only been on for 5 minutes.
Still champ for a year.
Priest never got the longer. Okay, but Seth might have got 7 minutes in 1 week. But then the next week, he had 15 again. Priest has never gotten to 15.
Okay, so.
Hold on.
Well, we're turning. Ironically, you're turning.
One more quick thought, and then we're going to move on to the next segment.
You're the math person here.
Yes.
I want you to go back, and I want you to tell me how many minutes Damian Priest was on TV Monday.
That was the first time. That's why I said. That was the first time.
Okay, you're right. Okay, fair. Do it the week before, and tell me how many minutes you were on TV.
It wasn't that long.
Okay. Tell me. Show me I'm wrong.
He matched the week before. Okay. Show, so, yeah.
Okay. Fuck it. Since he won the championship, pick them like he don't have a match and tell me how many minutes he's been on. I guarantee you every week it's at least 20 minutes.
Yeah, and know what he's doing? He's playing fucking... Rob, you're losing the point, Rob, because in those 20 minutes, he's playing daddy daycare for the fucking...
That's his storyline.
He's the world champion, damn it.
So forget, y'all love the bloodline. Forget all those times Roman was on TV with the championship with his stable. When you are the leader of a stable, that's your story.
Yeah, and yeah.
So he's not taking it serious because he's doing the job of being the leader of a stable?
This doesn't even make any sense. You're comparing daddy daycare to, I run this shit. I own this shit. You work for me. He works for me. Acknowledge me. I'm out of here.
And the only thing I'm going to say about that is you cannot book every world champion with the same exact story. You cannot give Damian Priest the exact same story Roman had. We've already seen it. We've already done it. Give him something different to do. From there, let's move on, because I think we're really going to start beating each other over the head here. Let's agree to disagree. We go, take a deep breath, as Jason would say, like last week when I completely fell apart on this show. Goosefaba.
$100, Ray. I will bet you $100.
Oh, Jesus, he's still going. Yeah. Jesus, take the wheel. We've got problems here on the Mindless Wrestling Podcast. I already plugged the t-shirts. Not going to do that again. We are going to dip right into the next segment here because I want to talk Uncle Howdy. I want to talk the Wyatt Six. We've been teased for months as to what was going to happen here. We've actually, it's been speculated since, you know, and we can't get out of this without talking about Bray Wyatt a little bit. I don't even know at this point how long Bray's been gone. Left an incredible legacy behind. It's been, if you watch the documentary on Bray Wyatt on Peacock, it's very obvious that Bo Dallas wanted to continue this. Like, this was their vision together as brothers. With Bray passing away, you know, unfortunately, you know, the way he did, it kind of left this whole incredible thing in limbo. Like, this incredible creative machine that Bray had was all of a sudden in limbo because its figurehead was gone. And they've been teasing over the last few, you know, weeks to months now that something was coming. And it was very reminiscent of when Bray came back right before he passed away with all the QR codes and, you know, the interruptions of the shows and everything like that. So it's been really cool to see them pick that up. But Monday night, we got the actual reveal. You know, it's been list kicked around a year ago as to who Bray Wyatt's team was going to be. And most of the names they got right. Obviously, Dexter Lumis was a shoe-in. Eric Rowan coming back was, you know, almost a given. A lot of people would have speculated Alexa Bliss because of where her story left off before she went on maternity leave. They fixed that. And, you know, Joe Gacy being part of that. Now, I'm just going to come right out of the rip and say that was absolute fucking cinema, what they did on Monday night to close out that show. We can just start with the general reaction from there, and then we can pick this thing apart a little bit more. Jason, you saw it, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, what'd you think?
It was awesome. It was every wrestle, spooky, wrestle magic, Mortal Kombat shit that I love about this stuff. When we can get to this point organically and not make it feel like a sideshow, I am 100% in. So
I got something for you, Jason, that you need to pay attention to. Well, it's somewhat WWE related, but not exactly WWE, that I think you'll dig. Sorry to cut you off.
Okay. Well, I was kind of done with my point, actually. Okay. I'm in.
Okay. Rob, you?
Oh, it was excellently done. And now the thing is, but we know with the Bray stuff, the first day is always excellent.
Can we get there, you know, like in 2 minutes?
Okay. I should have kept the toilet paper nearby because Rob's already taking a dump here.
Oh, no, I didn't say that.
I love getting him going.
I'm just going to go ahead and leave it at this. I have zero expectations because exactly what Rob's talking about. God bless what they're trying to do, but I hope they have just one or two people in charge. I hope there are not too many cooks in the kitchen.
Okay. I was trying to say it as a compliment because they always it's a testament to what their imaginations and everything that every time they've done a debut, whether it was the Swamp, you know, version of the Wyatt family or the Fiend, or when Fiend came back, or, you know, then the Uncle Howdy stuff the first night, or in this here, it's always the first night is always great, right? So I wasn't trying to be dismissive there. I'm just saying.
Yeah. I get your point, and we're going to dig into that in a minute. I just want to get Ray's general reaction to the segment itself as presented.
I was waiting because we all knew they had basically teased Saturday and Monday that was going to happen. So as that triple threat match was at the end of the night, I looked at the clock like, okay, we need to get to the getting. You know, even online, Uncle Howdy was tweeting from his Twitter account, we're here. Like, we get to the getting.
We got about 4 minutes left, Bubba.
Right. Yeah. Where are you? I got a hard out, though.
Visually, DJ had it right on the head. It's cinema. It was a beautiful visual. Terrifying in a way that wrestling often isn't. My question is, as we get into this next part of this conversation, was it too much?
And that's a great segue into this conversation.
It all depends on where it ends up. If it stays in a mostly cinematic universe, which I could see them doing, maybe, then no. I would say it wasn't too much, because then they can stay doing some crazy stuff. But the question always remains, at the end of the day, it is a live wrestling show that people pay to go to and sit in the stands. There's got to be some wrestling in that wrestling ring.
Yes.
What does that end up looking like is the million-dollar question for this.
And I'm in on
everything else.
And to that point, you say if it can kind of stay cinematic, I think they kind of said put the kibosh on that when you see them involve an actual active wrestler, Gable. Like, sure. Had Gable not be shown, I'd feel so much better about this because they can be self-contained. But much like, and I'm sorry to bring up this terrible memory of a fuck fest as it was, but like Retribution, when they were doing that bullshit, at a certain point, if there's some logic to the show, five people just came and murdered people. I'm not coming to work on Wednesday, Tuesday or Friday.
Right.
But we haven't made it to Friday yet. As of the airing of this show on Saturday, we drop on Saturdays on the Chairshot Radio Network. Those questions will be answered. And I think I said that in one of the chats. It may have been the Chairshot chat. It may have been the chat that I'm in with Jason and Rob. Is that wouldn't it be funny if on Monday everybody's terrified, like nobody wants to come to work? Like, I think that would be hilarious, but it would be a great addition to the story. And there's got to be at least somebody there who's like, I ain't going to the ring. I ain't coming to work. I'm not damn sure not hanging out in Gorilla.
Yeah, I think that's the key to what's one of the keys to this, because they took it that far. Like, Chuck Gable looked like he'd gotten double tapped.
Okay.
Chad looked like he was no longer with us.
Not just Chad, but the homie that was when Dexter Lumis was sitting there at Mercy, who looked like he got his head blown back with the blood all over
his big smear all over the wall.
Is this Call of Duty, bro? What are we doing?
Right. So like
you saying, motherfucker.
So yeah, like people need to be afraid to come to work next week. There have to be people who are just like, there needs to be somebody who has a match scheduled and they call Adam Pearce from home and just like, no, I'm just, fuck it, I forfeit, I don't give a fuck. Right?
Yeah.
Like somebody needs, like, you know, that needs to be going on. And, you know, and then there need to be some people who were mysteriously not there and who are now being questioned. Like, well, where were you? Like, you know, all these people, these masked people showed up and started, you know, killing people, and I didn't see you around. You know, were you one of them? Right? I mean, like, there needs to be some of that going on, too. Now, me personally, I don't care if they ever get in the ring, because that's where this stuff was always going sideways with Bray, is because, you know, when it's happened, because the act always gets over and it sells a lot of t-shirts and merchandise and all that stuff. And then they mistakenly think, well, we need to put him in a title match. And then you put him in a title match. And then if he doesn't win, we have the Hell in a Cell situation with Rollins where everybody wants a riot after the match is over. Well, then if he does win, then eventually he has to lose and then we get the Goldberg situation.
And to your point, that's why I asked, was it too much? Because so, DJ, you're essentially married. Jason, you're essentially married. Rob, I believe you've been married. We've all been in long-term relationships. Right?
I'm coming up on 5 years, man.
I didn't know if it was official or not. I apologize.
Oh, yeah. We're coming up on 5 years.
Yeah, right. Like, you know, if you're together, if you live together longer than a year, you're married to me. You don't have to have a ring, right? But anyway.
Yeah.
But when you start a relationship, the first date you have with that significant other will let that person know what the bar is. So if your first date is, I'm going to hop you on a plane and we're going to Cabo, every date after that's got to go higher. You can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. So when I say, did it go too far, to Rob's point, The Fiend did. The Fiend was 1994 Undertaker level of you can't hurt this man. So when it's time for him to lose, you have to do the most ridiculous amount of logic breaking ever existed and created in the wrestling business to get him to lose. So that was my fear. Did y'all do too much? I know we didn't see y'all physically doing stuff, but when you see 35 guys all dead,
you're gonna get beat by a super kick? This is a thought that I had, and I'm going to piggyback off what Ray just said. I said, at best, this will become this generation's Ministry of Darkness. At worst, it'll be this generation's Brood. And that's not an insult or a slight, because both places are an excellent place to be. I think what you do with Uncle Howdy is Uncle Howdy is an attraction. Uncle Howdy wrestles maybe two or three big matches a year. The rest of the guys do the work, because somebody in that team is going to have to be NWO Buff Bagwell and take the L's once in a while. Okay. So,
shout out to the homie Joe Gacy. That's what he's there for.
See, you beat me to it. Ray was in my head. You get out of my head, you motherfucker.
But come on.
Somebody takes the L. Uncle Howdy doesn't wrestle, but maybe a couple times a year, because then you can protect that. You can put him in big moments. He can win the big moments. You run into a situation like the Fiend, and I've got a Fiend action figure sitting up here. I loved everything about it. You know, everything about it, the presentation, all of it. I'm here for this. But again, you do book yourself into a corner if these people come off as too overpowered. So if it's me, I keep Uncle Howdy in the periphery and just doing, like, he's the puppet master.
One more question for the group, please.
Sure.
Everybody give me your answers if you want. Piggybacking off of that point. The reason that for all of his iniquities and for all of the things that fans said they didn't like or whatever about Bray, the reason people kept staying invested in Bray was because he was enthralling as a character and as a speaker.
Yes.
So even if you didn't like the matches, even if you thought it was a little too spooky, he would come out and say something that would make you stop and listen. And that carried his feuds and his momentum from point A to point B. I love Bo. Bo Leave was one of my favorite NXT moments ever, and I'm an NXT mark like no other. Is he enthralling of a character enough in this particular gimmick to carry this thing where it needs to go from an oration standpoint? You could have all the QR codes. You could have all the background. Jason Baker is the best in the business when it comes to making the actual visuals and all that stuff. Cool. But eventually, yeah, you got to wrestle. But even before you wrestle, you got to get out there and talk. And can Bo and this character do that? Because one thing that nobody can ever argue is all the stuff Bray said, Bray wrote. Somebody may have said, hey, we want you to say this, but Bray wrote that for 4, 5, 6, 7 years. Can Bo do the same thing? And that's another concern of mine. Can he really carry this to the level it needs to be carried?
Oh, wasn't Bo kind of in the room with him when he wrote a lot of that stuff?
No.
No?
He wasn't.
Oh,
No, this was a lot of stuff that Bray wrote, like, privately, is what my understanding was.
Oh, okay.
The Uncle Howdy stuff he was with him for, yes. But I'm talking... When back in FCW, when he came up with Bray Wyatt, when Eli Cottonwood was his heavy, that's a name y'all don't know or remember. Like, Bray's been doing this since before that. Bray came up with this gimmick when he left Troy as a football player. That's how long ago he started writing these things down and coming up with these concepts.
Well, yeah, and then of course his dad was a partner of Kevin Sullivan, and this is 40 years later, Kevin Sullivan with a budget and effects. Hey.
And I still believe to this day Kevin Sullivan is a devil worshiper. To this day. To this day.
I think to answer your question, Bo can talk. Like, you know, his time with those at the B team. The B team got away. Bo can get some shit over. Okay? But it was the silly shit that he got over. The Bo Leave, the B team. Now we're digging into something deep, and maybe sometimes just, you know, being a performer, somebody who's been out in front of people, and, you know, I acted in high school and I did the pro wrestling thing. Sometimes you got to draw on something personal, and you got to, with this character, it's dark, and he's got some very personal dark places that he can draw from. And it may be a little uncomfortable to do that, but I think if he can tap into that raw emotion of, hey, this was my brother and I looked up to this fucking cat and he's gone, you know, use that. Tap into it, man. Draw from it. He's left this legacy to you. I think it's okay for him to tap into that. And I think if he can find it in himself, I think Bo Dallas is going to do amazing things with this thing. And I think he's going to pay great respect to his brother.
Well, I think it helps being behind a mask and the whole getup. I think it helps because Bo Dallas is kind of a silly looking kind of dude, right?
It's the luchador conundrum. Yeah. Fair point.
Yeah. So I think, and like the general audience, like we know it's Bo Dallas. You know, there are a lot of people watching the show who have no idea who the hell that is on mask, right? So they're not going to be like, oh, that's the B team guy. Ugh. You know, so the people who don't know better, I mean, can take at face value. And so I think to that end, I think he can do fine. I think it's more of a concern for people like us who know
that are in the bubble.
Who know that, well, that's Bo Dallas. That's the Bo Leave guy. You know, right. I mean, you know, it's people like us who are more of a concern.
Look, man, I let fake Diesel become Kane and I bought into it. So I think I can do this.
Yeah.
Fucking Isaac Yankum became Kane. I think I'm okay here, guys.
Anybody remember Vinny Vegas?
Yes. Oz. I mean, come on. This is doable. This is totally doable in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, I agree.
So I think ultimately just, you know, you have to keep the car on the right lane. If you keep the car on the right lanes, I think it can work. Okay. And as long as – I don't know, I would keep the ring stuff to a minimum because the more they get in the ring, you know, the more they become just people having matches. And they're supposed to not be people having matches. So – I would keep the ring stuff to a minimum, personally.
Yeah. I mean, with some of them, yeah. I want to see Dexter Lumis back in the ring. I loved NXT Dexter Lumis. I thought he had a great feud with Cameron Grimes. I dug everything that they did with him. Did you see the little nugget from Indy Hartwell?
That's not the divorce,
yeah. She put something up on Twitter, said $99 divorce. Great commitment to the bit. I love it. I'm looking forward to seeing where this goes. And, you know, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Then you split the group up. I use the Ministry and the Brood analogy. I think if they can be what NXT wanted Schism to be, we're on the right track. Because we've talked about Schism here before. I've talked about Joe Gacy, and I never bought in. Like, I understood the vision, but Joe Gacy never reeled me into it. If Bo Dallas can reel me into this, you know, if Uncle Howdy, let's stop calling him Bo, Uncle Howdy can reel me into this, then I think they could do with this what Joe Gacy tried to do with Schism. Not like a supernatural group, just this group of miscasts and outcasts that are coming together to do violent things. Does that make sense?
Yes, now, but the key is they got to win stuff because Schism lost all the time. That was a
big problem. That's part of what hurt them. But you've got Dexter Lumis in here, and Dexter Lumis beating people is believable. Like, yeah, he looks like a dude who could beat somebody's ass. Joe Gacy can get it done in the ring. You know, bell to bell, I never had a problem with Joe Gacy. It was always the character. You know, Eric Rowland is a big, imposing dude. He looks like a guy who can fight. Nikki Cross is batshit crazy on a good day. So...
Wait, DJ, do you like Joe Gacy? Because you and Ray just did a drive-by on him earlier.
I like Joe Gacy bell to bell. Like, when the bell rings... He's there
to eat the pins, you said.
Okay, but... What? But Jason,
He's there to eat the pins, you said.
He is there to eat the pins.
Well, Jason, Arn Anderson was one of the best in-ring workers ever, and when he was in the 8-man 4-horseman match, Arn took the pin.
Yeah, Arn usually took the pin for the 4-horseman, so somebody's got to be the Arn Anderson
somebody's
of the group.
Do it.
And I'm in a weird spot with Joe Gacy, because I told you this, when the bell rings, Joe Gacy has got it. He turns it on. He goes, he's great. I never bought the character. And I'd much rather see him. Now, maybe now that he's not the main focus, maybe he'll find something that works for me. And I hope he does. Because like I said, I like watching him wrestle. I didn't care to listen to him talk. As soon as he started talking, I'm out. I'm like, all right, just shut up and put the mic down and get in the ring. So now that he's not, that's not going to be his role, I think I may enjoy Joe Gacy a bit more. So let's, since Ray is occupied again, let's move into the next segment here. As we talk WWE, we talk NXT, we're talking TNA. We are talking the NXT-TNA crossover. We got a taste of that a few weeks ago with Jordynne Grace versus Roxanne for the NXT Women's Championship. We got quite a bit more of that this week on NXT with a big battle royal for the number one contender for Trix NXT Men's Championship. A couple of TNA people in there, man. And this seems like this is not just a one-off. Like, we talked about this a few weeks ago. He said, okay, is this a one-off? Are we going to be doing more here? It looks like we're not only doing more, man. We're doing a lot more.
Well, Jaden Baxley showed up on a TNA show.
Yep. She wrestled Jordan, didn't she?
Yeah.
Yep.
Got her ass whipped, but she wrestled Jordan.
But that was important because the reciprocity is the key to these things. It can't just be the TNA people coming over to get beat.
Right. And before we get too deep into that, Jason, I did want to tell you something. I know I talked about it in the chat. When we talk about these spooky Mortal Kombat type things, TNA's doing something that I'm digging with Jonathan Gresham. He's doing this, what's called the octopus gimmick. He comes out in this mask, and it's almost like a very Cthulhu looking with the tendrils and everything. And he does this gimmick where, you know, Asuka's got the mist.
Yeah.
So he spits the ink. Okay.
The Cthulhu mask for a while. I didn't know he did the ink thing.
Yeah, he's doing the ink thing. And here's the thing about the ink. It doesn't poison you. It doesn't blind you. But everybody who gets inked eventually at some point gets some kind of sickness. Okay.
Oh, so, wow. That's it.
So it gets even better because Kushida this week, you guys remember Kushida as we talk NXT and TNA. Yeah. Kushida comes down because he's the Back to the Future mark. He comes down with a Doc Brown lab coat and some gloves and like a sample swab, shoves a rag in Jonathan Gresham's mouth to take a sample of the ink so he can take it back to the lab for testing. It's absolutely incredible.
That's incredible.
It's a beautiful thing, man. I saw this and I'm watching because Kushida comes out. I'm like, why is he wearing a lab coat? I'm like, oh, wait a minute. I know why he's wearing a lab coat. And he shoves the rag down his throat to get a sample of the ink. It's absolutely incredible. If you can find a way to watch TNA.
Oh, that's incredible. I need to check that out. What
the fuck did I walk into?
I was segueing from the supernatural spooky gimmick stuff to the stuff that Jonathan Gresham's doing in TNA with the octopus gimmick and the ink. Are you familiar with it?
I know he wears octopus mask, but the way I heard it when I got back on the call was, and he was in his, I was wondering why he was wearing black and putting ink down people's throat. Wait.
Okay, no. Okay, so Jonathan Gresham's got the octopus gimmick, right? And you know how Asuka does the mist?
Yeah.
Well, he spits the ink, okay? He spits this black ink, because octopus, right? Put your headphones back on. I'm trying to explain something. Put your headphones on.
My God.
Don't you dare jump off the call when I'm talking.
Oh,
no.
Boy.
So he spits
That's
the ink.
That's when they pull me back in.
So he spits the ink. And the gimmick is the ink makes people sick. It doesn't blind them. It doesn't burn. It makes them sick, okay? Because he's been feuding with Sammy Callahan, right? So Kushida's been involved in this. Kushida comes out last week, and he's wearing like a Doc Brown lab coat because, you know, he's a Back to the Future mark. So he's wearing like a Doc Brown lab coat. He comes to the ring. Jonathan Gresham's back turns. He's to the rope. He jumps up on the apron. He shoves a rag in Jonathan Gresham's mouth to try and collect a sample of the ink so he can take it back to the lab for testing.
Kushida, really?
It's fucking awesome.
For the record, now this is a real thing. All the mists that are spits come from Japanese parlance, right? all the different colors have a thing. They mean something, right?
Yeah.
So black, to his point, black really is the mist that makes you sick. So, I mean, at least it's keeping up with the kayfabe of it.
That's awesome.
Before we get into the TNA NXT discussion, I want to put over TNA a little bit because, yes, given the fact that there's now this partnership, I have started watching a little bit of it again. But there's some really fun stuff to keep up with there. Like the Octopus thing right now has got me roped in. I'm a big fan of the PCO, Steph DeLander, little love thing that they've got going on here. That's been kind of fun. They've got some – TNA's always had really good wrestling. Like TNA probably 15, 20 years ago – bell to bell, probably had some of the best wrestling content in North American wrestling, period. And, you know, they still have some of that going on today. Joe Hendry, we're going to talk about him a little bit. They've really got some stuff in TNA that's really, really working and really, really enjoyable. So if you're not checking that out, I do want to take a minute to kind of put that over. But I do want to get into this NXT partnership because as it's growing and becoming more, we're seeing more and more. And Ray, when you stepped out for a minute, I started to talk about the Battle Royal from Wednesday night or Tuesday night. Sorry, that other show does the Wednesday night show. NXT's Tuesdays now. Let's start here. Are you excited for this? Because I know the last time TNA went to bed with somebody, they shit the bed. Do you think this is going to be different this time around? And do you think TNA will ultimately benefit from this?
Yes, 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 and yes. The difference between this and, as you called, the other show, is the other show didn't treat this TNA like they were equals. NXT is treating, and WWE is treating TNA like they're equals. The way they brought Jordynne Grace in, with not just to fight Roxy, but at the Rumble, and let her have the moments that she had. Mm-hmm. Same with Mickey the year before, right? In fact, it was just, one of the Twitter accounts released like the top five most socially viewed segments since WrestleMania. And number one is Joe Hendry, and number five or four is Jordynne Grace. Yeah. That's of everything that's happened in WWE since April 3rd, 1st, 2nd, whatever it was. People care. Right? And I mean, remember, Joe Hendry's a guy that literally got on the Billboard Hot 100 with his song. Like, yeah, so people are caring about this, but they're treating it perfectly equal. And yeah, Joe Hendry got kicked out early, but that was fun because, you know, he kind of took the show himself. But who had a great showing? Your boy Kaz. And I don't mean Kazim Familiwide. I mean Kazarian.
Yeah, Frankie Kazarian.
So yeah, he's
showing.
It's going to work because they treat them as equals and they're actually bigging up TNA. Just the fact of saying WWE's been the number one company since the 70s, right? So, or the 80s, whenever Vince stole everybody's land, right? When he manifests destiny and shit. So the fact that WWE says your name on their show, talks about your championships, mentions that the wrestlers that wrestled for them wrestled in your company, bring your wrestlers over and let them bring your championship there. Like, a thing that's not talked about enough is they sent Tatum Paxley down there to take Jordan's open challenge, you know?
Yeah.
Jason mentioned that.
Okay. And it's important that Rob said it the best, you know, we're already off to a great start because there's reciprocity. Yeah, Tatum Paxley is not on the same level in WWE that Jordan is in, TNA, but all things created equal, there's already some, you know, hey, we're letting you pin our guys. So we're already off to a roaring good start.
Please, I'm sorry.
Oh, no. This isn't like when they had, you know, Kenny Omega lose the TNA title to Christian, who was contracted to AEW, you know.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I mean, I, I don't think that Ava or Adam Pearce is going to put on some dumbass sunglasses, show up on Impact, and be like, hey, everything around here sucks, huh?
Right.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody can even mention a TNA wrestler that showed up on AEW's television.
I couldn't name a one. And then whoever showed up, they poached.
It was the Good Brothers did.
Swan
showed up a couple of times and they made him look like a dickhead every single time.
I don't ever remember Swan being on AEW television. I know Swan lost to Kenny, but so if he did show up, well then that's one guy that I didn't know. So you talk
well,
about
and, it. Proved the point.
And he, well, but even still, they treated him like an asshole.
Yeah, maybe like a geek.
I remember, seriously, I think he got locked out of the locker room on the show or something like that.
Oh, but that was on the TNA show. That was on their own show.
That's right. He got locked out of the locker room on his own show. That's right.
Oh, boy.
Because Tony cut that guy or what? I felt horrible for Rich Swann. And his personal
That's on them. That's on TNA. That's on Anthem because they literally let Tony Khan walk in there.
That's my point. I felt bad for Rich Swann.
Feet up on the couch. Yeah.
They had no leverage.
Yeah.
And to their point, and that's the one thing that gave me pause about this is the way they did Scott D'Amore. Scott D'Amore picked that shit up and put it on his back and said, "We're gonna make this shit successful no matter what."
Yeah.
And they've done that. You know, and now they're still cooking now that he's gone, but like that's all because of Scott. And I don't know if he wasn't in control yet or he didn't have the book or something, but they had no leverage. And well, that gives you all the answer you need to know.
Yeah. There's Don Callis being in charge. So let's talk about this this deal with NXT and TNA a little bit. You know, we've got some cross-pollination of talent. We've got some people jumping over, going to the other shows. Do we think that this leads to a joint PLE? Yes. You think we're headed that way? World I'm excited for that because one of my favorite premium live events or pay-per-views from back in the day was the super shows that WCW used to do with, I think it was New Japan.
Yeah.
I loved those shows. And to have the Japan guys come over and work shows and, you know, come on to WCW TV and do all that and then just this big joint show. And I never felt like obviously the WCW guys took the big wins and the big spots because it was a WCW branded pay-per-view. But I never felt like the Japanese talent was less than, you know. I'm looking forward. If that's where we're headed, I'm super excited about this because there's some really good workers in TNA. There's some really good stuff going on in there. And, you know, it was Eric Young was teasing that there's more to come. So, like, yes, we've got what we've got. He's like, but there's bigger things coming.
Because TNA has this, like, one of their B shows every year is called, they call it Multiverse of Madness, like after the Doctor Strange movie. And they do, like, they bring in people from other companies and whatnot and do cross-promotional stuff. So, I don't know. I mean, that something like that is easily doable.
What's interesting to me, of course, there's some stuff that I think off top you can immediately say I want to see. Like, Moose and Trick needs to happen. Right? I think that needs to happen. Even if you want to do the Nigerian versus against the Nigerian Warfare, Moose versus Oba. Moose versus one of those champions needs to happen, I think, personally. There's some stuff there. I want to see Wesley back with the Rascals against somebody. That could be fun. Like, some stuff needs to happen, right?
Yeah.
But the more interesting thing to me is how they're going to handle the WWE wrestlers that are there. That are
you
there.
Beat me to it. That thought, get out of my head tonight, Ray. Damn it.
You saw at Battleground, Ash by Elegance, you know.
Yes,
you know, your boy Ziggler's over there killing it. Ali's having the run of a lifetime over there.
Yes.
Like, there's a lot of guys over there that
would
be interesting to see how they would come back in the territory.
Well, Eric Young didn't have anything particularly bad to say in his, he was hypercritical of his releases, you know, a couple years ago. You know, the first time around, he was hypercritical. Then he came back. He spent about 5 minutes there, didn't feel like he got anywhere, asked to be let out again, and he was pretty critical of it all. He's turned the corner. Like, he's like, okay, he's like, let's see what happens here. I think it could be good for business. Hunter's got a good mind for these things.
Eric never hated WWE, had a problem with WWE. Eric hates Vince. So
that.
The second Vince got back in power, he was like, I'm gone.
Yeah.
But he's even said, Hunter's a genius. I'd work for him any day. I just couldn't work for Vince.
Right. So it'll be interesting to see how, you know, and Ziggler again. I don't know where Ziggler, because Ziggler, I read an interview with him recently, and he said when he asked to be released from WWE, he sent Vince an email. And he said the first half of the email was very complimentary. He's like, Vince told me I always had a job in WWE. He's like, then I turned around, they're not using me, I'm not doing anything, I'm sitting on my ass. He's like, I want to work. He's like, the second half of the email wasn't quite as politic, but he sent it. I don't know what his personal thoughts on working with or for Triple H would be. And Ali, I have no idea where he stands with it all, because he was released after Vince was already gone, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So he didn't even get any satisfaction under the Triple H regime.
Well, Vince wasn't gone.
Vince was gone.
But every report, I know y'all hate reports, so I'm sorry, but I got to say it. Ali was supposed to win the North American Championship the week he got fired.
Okay.
So they clearly love the dude. It's just somebody up top, Nick Khan, Vince, Ari Emanuel, was like, cut the purse strings. We need to cut money. And Ali got thrown in the fire.
Ali got the shaft on that one.
Yeah.
So. All right. What's really interesting is, and I don't exactly know all the promotions, but WWE seems to have opened up some more doors to some other promotions. Ray, Rob, Jason, have any of you guys got the names on any of these promotions that they're talking about potentially working with?
Well, Noah for sure with the match.
Well, Noah we knew, Bushi.
Rossi Agunwe or whatever, the dude that was over Stardom who runs Marigold now.
Yeah.
There's that, because remember, Julia apparently is signed with WWE but has the double signing. She's doing the six-month bid with Marigold to help Rossi get that over and then come to the Fed. That's okay. Why... EO's going over to do that match with Otami. So that's definitely happening. We've seen them have some crossover with GCW because Shayna wrestled at Bloodsport with Josh Barnett. And we've seen Stephanie and Hunter and Nick Khan and Regal all cozying up a whole lot with Rhett Carpenter. The dude who's over GCW, why I can't remember his name right now, I don't fucking know. I'm sorry. Yeah. So that's another thing that's possible. And GCW is the hottest indie in the game right now.
Yeah.
So there, you know, Booker repeatedly gets people from NXT to go to Reality of Wrestling. You know, Lexus King is here every month.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
wow,
like
that's
every
cool.
month. Yes, they have monthly shows, and Lexus King is on every show, has been like for 4 months. Book loves the dude for some reason. Well, Book and Brian Pillman, I imagine, were friends, but yeah. So there's a lot of these ties, but even, look, man, I know if Gato, and maybe it's different because Rossi's gone, and that caused a lot of drama between the Japanese companies. You know, all the Bushiroad companies and whatever. But I know Gato's thinking like, man, I hate I'm in this relationship with fucking Tony Khan, because right now WWE's doing business and we could be doing business with them.
Yeah.
You know, like, how hilarious would it be to have a WWE wrestler wrestle in the G1 before Danielson does? I swear to God, that'd be the funniest shit in the world to me.
That'd be hilarious. That would absolutely be hilarious. It's interesting that, you know, WWE is opening all these doors, all these promotions, and you got to wonder at some point, Tony Khan's got to look around and go, okay, well, what about me? You know, I've been poking this bear for 5 years, and they still won't talk to me. That's got to send a clear message to him about how WWE feels about that company.
I mean, I'd argue that even if WWE wanted to do business, Tony hates them with a passion.
And like, so unnaturally, unnecessarily so.
It's truly like it's almost like, remember when the Giant debuted as the found son of Andre the Giant
coming
back to vanquish his dead? It's like Tony Khan ain't Shaheed Khan's son. It's Ted Turner's son or something. Like, he is this motherfucker. Like he's Greg Gagne or some shit. Like, it's, he hates this dude.
Yeah, it's and become so, like a personal, I don't get it, man.
Also, I'd like to note, I saw a tweet or Reddit or something that said that for all of the negative and the issues that Tony and AW have, which are endless, you got to give him credit because he opened up the idea of this Forbidden Door collaboration shit. And I was like, well, Triple H been trying to do this for a decade. The old man wouldn't let him. That's the whole point of global localization.
To be fair, Vince tried it years ago. Vince had a relationship with AAA for a little while. They teased getting some of the luchadors in here. It fell apart. He had an open, I don't know if he worked with New Japan or All Japan, but he had an open door. He was sending people over to work the Japan shows.
So Paul Lee, ECW.
Yeah.
And with Smoky Mountain Wrestling.
Yeah. He had guys coming to and from Smoky Mountain, USWA. So
the NWA. NWA. Worked in WWE, yeah.
Right. So Vince always, there's like this narrative that Vince never wanted to do business outside of WWE. I just think he understood it best that it's very hard to satisfy all parties, you know, because you are going to get people that are very, very particular about, like, you know, they're obviously people don't ever want to see Jordan Grace lose to a WWE superstar, no matter who it is, and vice versa, you know? So it's hard to please all parties. One of these, what's the saying? You can please some of the people some of the time, but not all of the people all the time. And that really is the story of pro wrestling.
I think Vince just didn't want to do business with competition. And everybody he did business with, he didn't consider competition.
And I think Triple H believes in the adage of, what is it, the rising tide raises all ships?
Well,
you know. I think, and right now, but right now, WWE is the rising tide.
Yeah,
and yes, they want to still be the highest ship in the water. You know, make no doubt about that. But if you can bring some other people along with you, competition, you know.
AEW is a competition, WWE, for anything else other than actual wrestlers.
But
they are competition in the sense that Tony has opened up a company that's attractive to wrestlers because, one, he will pay them a fucking mint to go there.
Well, that's what I mean. That's the only way the competitive is that he could actually hire wrestlers, but WWE shown we have a state of the art performance center that builds stars when we need them.
Right.
So a guy will leave, and then the next guy will come up, and then they'll be a superstar for 10 years, and then they'll leave, and the next guy will come up. They'll never be left like they were when Stone Cold and The Rock left the territory.
Yeah, Jason, you've been notoriously quiet for about the last 5 minutes. Are you still with us, or did you like tap out on us? He's still muted.
Okay. I will say, you know, there's only one. There's one kind of negative.
All right, that was good.
There's one negative thing you can take from all of this, and that's the wrestling partnerships always end with people getting their wrestlers stolen. And
I think we know WWE is eyeing Jordan Grace, and if you don't think they're eyeing Joe Henry after Tuesday night,
so that's going to happen. Okay, everybody.
Well, hey, they got Dolph Ziggler.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that you kind of have to look at it that way, and that's how I'd look at it if I was TNA. Like, hey, we get it. We're the way station. We understand.
Well, TNA,
you know, like if you just embrace that, you know, and then you know, some people, you know, some ghosts and some ghouls don't ever leave the way station. So you know, you get a few of those guys. That's just the way it is.
I wouldn't even be against them doing I know UFC and One did it with Ben Askren and Mighty Mouse. I wouldn't be against them doing a straight-up trade for trade. You give us Jordan Grace's contract, we'll give you the contract to Natalya or some shit. Right? Like, I can't – that works for everybody.
Yeah. And so Natalya's a solid trade, man. You will never hear me knock Natalya.
You're talking kayfabe or real life?
Real life.
Both.
The UFC and One Entertainment did that. Ben Askren was fighting for the company in Japan. Mighty Mouse was the most tenured champion in UFC, and Mighty Mouse won out. Ben Askren wanted to come to America. They literally said, "Here, we'll switch contracts. Now y'all work. You there? You go. You work for us. They work for you." If an MMA company can do it, and that's as legitimate as it gets because they're regulated, why the fuck can't a wrestling company do it?
I don't know. on the
sidebar, right. How funny is it that the most over wrestler outside of WWE doesn't work for AEW? How crazy is that? That just blows my mind.
So crazy, dude. And that dude, I get it. Like, what? Like, I didn't get the Joe Hendry thing because I hadn't watched any TNA in a long time. And like, I was asking you guys, like, I've literally just seen the GIFs and everything on Twitter and people saying they believe in this dude. And then by the end of his thing, I was like, oh, he's just Wrestler Ken, which I said to you guys at the time, that is the highest compliment I can give him because that gimmick works, brother. Like, after that 5 minutes of being introduced to that dude, I was like, yeah, I'm in on this guy.
What amazes me about Joe Hendry is how quick this took off because, you know, like I said, I've only just dipped back into TNA. But, you know, I spend a fair amount of time on the X app when I'm not working or doing other shit. And, you know, and all of a sudden I keep hearing these little talks at Joe Hendry this. I believe, I'm like, who the fuck is Joe Hendry? Like, I had no clue he was even a wrestler. I mean, I knew he was in the wrestling sphere, but I didn't know he was a worker. I didn't maybe say a manager. Is it, what is he? What is this dude's deal? And then, you know, as Jason said, the gifts start printing of the clips. And they're like, oh, wait a minute. This guy's a worker and he works for TNA. Let me check out what this is about. Absolutely just excellent stuff. Excellent stuff with him. The whole thing, the whole presentation is awesome.
So I mentioned at the beginning of the show that my friends Ricky and Clive, if you don't know who they are, they're two dudes from Scotland, outside of Glasgow, right? And so that's home of ICW, Insane Championship Wrestling, you know, where Drew came from. So many great wrestlers have come through. It's one of the biggest indies in the UK. And Joe Hendry came, that's where he kind of cut his teeth. And I remember hearing about him from them, but particularly the match when Drew went back after he got fired and the match with him and he came out to I'm Drew da ba dee da ba da. And I was like, what the fuck is this? And you see that. And then I'm like, okay, this is hilarious. And then you see more and more and more. And then most recently in TNA with the Curt Hawkins and Brian Myers and Mike Cardona, you just Edge's bitch. And now with my boy AJ Francis, like, he is genius, dog. The way he does this shit.
Yeah.
And it's fresh and refreshing. It's one of those things that like makes wrestling fun again because, you know, we watch the shit every day and we talk about it, we dissect it, we obsess over it. But sometimes we forget how fun this shit is. And like Joe Hendry just is fun.
Yes.
Good show.
Yep. It, what does Jay say? Who's wrestling for?
Kids and Nanas.
Kids and Nanas. And sometimes as analysts, as the lawyer Dave Unger would like to call us, we forget that.
And Joe Hendry is O-V-E-R with the Kids and Nanas.
Because you're singing that song in your head right now, aren't you, Jason?
Goddamn right I am. I do believe in Joe Hendry.
All right, gentlemen, on that note, why don't we call to go home and get out of here, huh?
Sounds good to me.
All right. Everybody, thank you for making it this far with us, an hour and a half into episode 198 of the Mindless Wrestling Podcast. We are two episodes away from 200. I can't believe we made it this far. I want to thank everybody who's been along with us for this ride. I want to thank everybody at the Chairshot Radio Network for welcoming us on board, giving us a home, you know, to come out and talk to everybody. Greg DeMarco for believing in us. Everyone who's helped us along the way, Ray Cash, PC Tunney, everybody who's been involved in the show, giving us feedback, helped promote. It's been awesome. 200th episode is coming up in two just very short weeks. Going to wrap around the room here and thank my cast of characters here, starting with our special guest, Ray Cash, sir. Always a pleasure having you on here. Thank you so much for showing up tonight, man.
Hey, always a pleasure to be on with you guys. It's always fun. This isn't the first time I've talked wrestling really in a long time, so it was kind of good to get off the horse. I'm not quite Pookie yet. I'm not jonesing for it yet, but you know, this was a start.
Hey, whatever gets you back. Even like you said, man, I get it. Sometimes you gotta do your thing. You gotta step away from it. It gets a little heavy. It gets a little much. as you said a couple minutes ago, sometimes we forget how to be fans, and especially when we're analysts, and you want to get back to being a fan. And you know, I respect the hell out of that. So again, thank you. Thank you for your time, man. I truly do appreciate you for that. Jason, sir, fun show.
Yeah, as soon as I saw, I logged into our little chat app and saw that Mr. Ray Cash was here, I was like, well, we're going goddamn near 2 hours, so.
I tried to run a tight ship here tonight, but I knew.
Just tell me to shut up, bro. I won't say a word.
Okay.
When you're pontificating and you're making some good points.
That works for everybody else with Rob. Rob can never talk.
And from the Rob the Genius Show, Mr. Rob, sir, another awesome show. Thank you.
Yeah, always a pleasure, even though Ray was here.
I mean, big bro loves little bro. He knows what's up.
Big bro loves nothing but love on this show. I am the man with the award-winning and holy beard, DJ. Again, this has been the Mindless Wrestling Podcast, part of the Chairshot Radio Network. You can find us on thechairshot.com every Saturday morning on your favorite streaming platforms. Remember, you can call it pro wrestling, you can call it sports entertainment, you can call it whatever you want, but call it in the ring, and we are out of here till next week.
Growing businesses and finance professionals, you need Bill, Spend, and Expense, the free-to-use spend management software. It's powered by the Bill Divvy Corporate Card, which helps growing companies scale with credit lines of $500 to $15 million, automated expense reports, and as many virtual cards as you need. For a limited time, get $500 when you get started with Bill Spend and Expense. Request a demo at bill.com/get500. Terms and conditions apply. Advertised credit ranges are not guaranteed and are determined at approval. Card issued by Cross River Bank, member FDIC.
Find all your 4th of July needs at low prices, all in the Kroger app. Get USDA Choice bone-in tender ribeye steaks for $7.99 a pound with a digital coupon. Limit 5, then buy 2, get 3 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.